All right, so I'm pleased to welcome to the Shilling Show David Murata. He's with us regularly. We always have an interesting conversation, and I believe a very valuable conversation because he's so good at analysis. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management. You read him now in the Sunday edition of the daily newspaper in the editorials and opinion section. We're talking today about which candidate really favors small business, and then we'll get into the topic of Romney's tax returns if we have time. David, welcome back to the Shilling Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know what I'd like to start off with, because I'm not sure people really understand the importance of small business to the American economy.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've done a lot of research for my article coming up on Monday, and it turns out that 49.4% of employees are employed by small businesses. And small businesses, there's a small business assistance center. It has sort of a definition. Their definition of small business is quite convoluted. It depends on your industry, and then it depends on your revenue or number of employees. But for statistical purposes, they suggest just using the moniker of 500 or under 500 employees. And it turns out that half of all employees are working for a small business. And what's interesting, too, is about small business growth, because if you just look at small businesses and large businesses, it turns out that large businesses generally consolidate the number of employees. They're generally trying to make their efforts more streamlined, and they're generally cutting back on the number of employees. And the only reason that large businesses don't shrink as a percentage of businesses is because some of the small businesses keep graduating and becoming large businesses, and that's how the balance is maintained between about half large businesses and half small businesses. So it turns out that the large businesses actually have a negative growth during the 2000s. So since 2000 to the latest statistics now, there's been a shrinkage in the number of large business employees, but there's been this graduation of small businesses to large businesses that's kept the percentages roughly equal.
You know, I think this is so important, because unless people have had a direct experience with a small business as far as running it, some people have worked for small businesses. I've certainly owned them, and I know you do right now. They don't understand this. They don't understand the day-to-day. They think, you know, well, everything kind of runs by itself. You go in there, if it's a store, you open the store up and you take your customers, you count your money at the end of the day, and that's about it. But it's so much more than that, isn't it?
It is. Small businesses are the entrepreneurial spirit of America. It's what makes America great. It's what produces gross domestic product growth. And it turns out if you took out the people who work for government, Romney would win in a landslide. It is generally people who work for government who are not able to overlook their own self-interest and think they have to therefore vote for government because they're doing such great work. I used to work for government agencies. I used to be part of the NEA. I used to be a teacher at a community college. And even back in my 20s, I would vote for a more conservative platform, which was against my self-interest. And I think we need more patriots that are willing to not just vote their self-interest, because as a greater percentage of America gets on the dole, and by on the dole, I don't mean that derogatorily. I just mean has an interest in government largesse. We become more and more like Greece. And Greece, you take any election in Greece, and they will not cut back the size of their government.
This is what's scary, because it's self-perpetuating. In other words, those in power have discovered, those who are running the government at all levels, whether it is here in Charlottesville at the state level or the federal level, that if we just make our government bigger, if we just continue to grow it, the phenomenon that you just referenced, which is people voting for the interest of continuing government largesse, they'll be able to stay in power indefinitely. When I was running for city council, the word was put out by the establishment inside City Hall that, hey, if you vote for that guy, he wants to cut back the size of government, you might lose your job. And so when people are dependent on their livelihoods for this, of course they're going to vote and support people like Barack Obama who want to grow the government.
Yeah, and that's as dangerous as it gets. Milton Friedman wrote probably the most interesting article I've ever read by him, called The Fragility of Freedom at 60%. And when 60% are somehow getting something from the government, that's the case where incentives break down. And really, it's up to conservatives to make the moral case for free enterprise. And I think at least part of that is that free enterprise safeguards lasting happiness, because what you produce, you're able to control. And that freedom and that pride is what gives people their sense of happiness.
And conversely, and we could look to these socialist countries in Europe, and we've seen it over and over again, that people there are generally not happy. But we don't have to go to Europe. We can look here to people who are receiving so-called entitlements from the government, and they're very angry. I don't know if you saw the video of the lady who had the free Obama cell phone, and this made a national splash. But, I mean, she wasn't happy. She wasn't fulfilled. She just wanted more. And I think what happens is you get people who are used to being given something, they become very resentful over that.
Yeah, it's a great thought experience. We have thousands of people listening to your show right now. There are many of them driving in their car. The car has five buttons that you get to pick as favorites. Imagine if every time you pressed one of your favorite buttons, you got a random radio station just to make it fair. I don't think I'd press my button very much. I'd try to find some other way to get around the random fairness and listen to the stations I wanted to listen to. I have three or four favorite stations, and five buttons is plenty for me. But if I press that button, I want the station that I've chosen. I want my choice to actually have some effect on what I get back and listen to.
But, you know, we look at this now, and I think that there are so many people in the country who are disconnected from what you just said, who believe that equality of outcomes is the most important thing. And so we have many people in the national political scene who are pushing this. You know, just vote for me, and I'll make it fair. I'll level the playing field. I'll spread the wealth around.
Yeah, and in truth, part of the moral case for free enterprise is that it does the most good for the most vulnerable. Nothing else has improved the plight of the poor except for global trade and free enterprise. And people who disagree with that just aren't looking at the facts in the slightest, because every voluntary economic transaction makes both sides richer.
And, you know, America's poor are rich for the most part by world standards. So you come here, the poor people, instead of living in a cave somewhere or living out in nowhere, a lot of them are living in subsidized housing that is superior to middle-class housing in many other places in the world.
And if you're unemployed and you want a job, your best chance is with a small business.
Yeah, it's very true. We're talking with David Murata. He's the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratahonmoney.com. We hope that you'll join us at 977-1070. 977-1070 is the phone number. If you have comments, questions, criticisms, challenges, hey, don't wait till the last minute. Take advantage of the opportunity. Bruce can take your calls right now at 977-1070. When we get back from the break, we're going to be talking about the important distinction between marginal and effective tax rates. And also, did President Barack Obama lower I think it was 18 times he claimed. Did he lower taxes on small businesses 18 times? Gosh, I, in essence, have a small business in a way with real estate, and I certainly don't remember that. We're going to get hurt even more as this tax tsunami approaches at the beginning of the year. It's all coming. Anyway, we're going to evaluate those claims and take your calls. And more of The Shilling Show is to come right after this. Stay tuned for news and weather at the bottom of the hour. The phone number here on The Shilling Show. Hey, thanks for joining us. We welcome you. Any political perspective is welcome on this program. Unlike others, we really do honor all points of view. David Murata is with us. He's online at muratahonmoney.com. We're talking about which candidate really does favor small business. And a lot of this has to do with taxation. There was some talk and some discussion, and we need to understand the difference between marginal and effective tax rates in the context of this discussion.
Yeah, it's interesting. The effective tax rate is the average rate that a corporation pays. The marginal tax rate is the tax rate of the next dollar that gets paid. And I think I wrote an article in which I did the following thought experiment. Imagine there's a 10% rate, and then it jumps to 100%. Most businesses would stop at the 100% rate. They wouldn't earn anymore because the government's just going to take it all anyway. So their effective rate would be 10%. Yet their marginal tax rate would be bumping up against that 100%, and as a result, it would truncate any business growth. If you simply made a flat tax of 20%, you would collect twice as much money, and yet you would not stifle growth. And that's Romney's point in the debate, which I thought was very interesting, is that he wants to lower the rate and then remove some of the exclusions to collect the same amount of tax. It turns out that might not sound like it's doing anything. And he even said that during the debate. It might sound like I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
But because he's changing the top marginal rate and lowering it, he is unleashing the power of businesses to produce wealth. And if there's one thing I wish every American would understand is that all decisions are made at the marginal rate. They are not made at the effective rate. And any discussion of the effective rate, you should just take that and say that's irrelevant. The only thing that really counts is the marginal rate at which corporations are paying tax or small business owners.
Yeah, as if they weren't smart enough to figure out what that is. They would just look at a number on a piece of paper and say, well, I'm going to respond to that. No, they actually have people who are paid to look at this and understand what that is and how they work with it.
Right.
You know, the other thing I want to talk to you about having to do with tax rates, and it's a little off topic, but we did have a call when we were talking about the debate, and somebody said, well, you know, they thought it was immoral or unvirtuous of Mitt Romney because he somehow had some money somewhere where he didn't have to pay taxes and it moved it offshore or something. And I don't even know if that was an accurate statement, but if it was, my comment was, well, if it's legal and that's part of the tax system, I don't see anything wrong with it at all. I mean, you should work to close those quote-unquote loopholes if you don't like them, but don't complain because someone took advantage of it.
It's interesting that that most of those comments come from the fact that Romney paid a significant amount in foreign taxes. What they don't seem to realize is that so did Obama. Obama paid a significant amount in foreign taxes, and I paid a significant amount in foreign taxes, and so did any of the listeners. If they have a smart tax advisor and they have any kind of foreign investments held in a taxable account. So if you own any foreign mutual fund in a taxable account, you paid foreign tax. I remember the very first time I did my taxes and I took $7.50 off as the foreign tax paid.
Yes.
And I remember thinking to myself, well, maybe one day we'll add a few zeros to this and I'll be able to deduct a little bit more. But there's no evidence that Romney has foreign accounts that he's not reporting as tax income. That's generally illegal. And there's no, I mean, there if Bain Capital owned any foreign businesses that were held entirely overseas or had foreign business overseas, there's a reason why you don't pay tax on that. And that is because if I had to pay a 60% tax rate in Singapore and then I had to pay a 60% tax rate in the United States,
uh-oh,
I'd owe 120% of my tax.
Right.
And so the 60% that I pay in tax, I don't have to pay tax on. I only have to pay a 60% tax on the 40% that's left over. And so that's why foreign tax paid is a tax deduction. It's because in highly progressive systems, otherwise you get taxes that are over 100% and you just can't pay them. And everyone says, everyone criticize my article by saying, oh, 100% tax rate, that's completely ridiculous. And yet there are many places in the tax code because of speed bumps in the tax code where there are effective rates that go over 100%. And those are highly destructive to moving up and down the income scale.
977-1070 is the phone number. David Murata is our guest, and Gregory's with us. Hello, Gregory.
Hey, this is Rob.
Yes.
Hey, David. You know, I don't understand the far left, and especially the Obama administration. It seems like that they think that business is going to continue to try to make profit and work anyway, and somehow there's sort of an evil conspiracy behind it. The bottom line is I'm a small businessman, and if you regulate me or tax me too much, I'm just going to give up and do something else easier. And what they and the debate, Obama said it was math. Well, in fact, it's like he can't even understand that if you bring the taxes down, the regulations down, that there will be twice as many people working. Therefore, there will be more money being made and more taxes paid in the long run. And it just seems like they don't understand that. Is there something in their brain that just doesn't see it, or what is it?
Yeah,
and I'm going to sign off and listen to your answer.
Great. Yeah. That leaves a line open for you at 977-1070. Go ahead, David.
Gregory, you're exactly correct. If there was one thing that I could say to the far left, having worked with a large percentage of our clients who are small business owners, that they are not indefinite slaves. And you push them too hard and you take away free enterprise and their businesses no longer make them happy and they no longer work at them, that there is a great freedom of fairness. And on the one hand, they are incredibly generous people willing to give large sums of money to their causes and charities and their employees. But on the other hand, if you take it away from them, they give up because they don't want the money to go out of their pocket involuntarily. They want it to go out voluntarily, and there's a great pride and sense of accomplishment there. So our small business owners are just as frustrated, and many of them are rich enough that they could throw in the towel and they could just retire, and they will if the marginal rates go up to make their businesses no longer profitable and no longer able to support the causes they want to support.
You know, I saw the same sort of ignorance displayed last night in the debate between George Allen and Tim Kaine, wherein Tim Kaine basically said we need a balanced approach. In other words, we can tax ourselves into prosperity even though we're spending so much more money than we should be. We need to raise taxes also. And I'm thinking, you know, you're taking money out of the private sector. That is not the recipe for success.
Yeah, Margaret Thatcher said taxing yourself into prosperity is like standing in a bucket and trying to pick yourself up by the handle. It just doesn't work. It's a losing game. And money that flows through the government is money that is largely has a negative effect. It competes with private enterprise, and the places it go does not do as much business because it doesn't have the moral happiness that earned income has.
977-1070 is the phone number. David Murata is our guest, and we will take more of your calls when The Shilling Show returns in just a moment. Stay with us. Final segment with David Murata. 977-1070 is the phone number. We'd love to hear from you. Bruce stands by. Call in now at 977-1070. And Chris has been waiting through the break. Chris, thanks so much for joining us today on The Shilling Show. You're on with David Murata.
Thank you, Rob. How are you doing today, David?
Good.
I'm glad that you come on the show. I always like hearing what you have to say. I am a financially challenged individual, so every little bit helps when I can listen to somebody who knows what they're talking about. The reason I'm calling is the same point that Greg brought up. And I really think that it's the time in this country for the right. I believe the left has expended their influence. I know that they're still very influential, but I think people are starting to realize that when somebody is telling you that your dog is on fire, and you look down and the dog is just as happy as can be and everything's fine, and the other person keeps saying that your dog is on fire, eventually you just kind of look at them and say, you know, you've had your time. I'm sorry. We're just not going to believe you anymore. And this economic idea of having more people to work, I don't think President Obama and the people that are surround him want to see this country powerful. I don't think they want to see this country grow economically. I don't think they want to see people prosperous. I think they want to see people in the third world prosperous, and that means putting a noose around us and holding us back in order for that to happen. And I think it's very unfortunate, but I appreciate what you're doing, and thank you very much.
Chris, thanks. Let's get a response.
Yeah, Chris is exactly right. We're all financially challenged these days,
yeah.
From small business owners to government deficit. I can't agree more. I think Romney probably won the first debate simply by not showing up with horns and a tail. The lies that the left continues to say about small businesses, about Romney's taxes, about generosity, about growth, and about what produces growth in this country, I think is the biggest impediment to a clear discussion, and that's where the right has to change tactics somewhat. We tend to have the upper hand when it comes to all of the facts and figures. You can't argue with who creates jobs and how jobs are created and what effect marginal taxes have. But what we have to win is the moral debate of why this is actually the best thing for poor people. This promotes real fairness, and this gives us the best chance of lasting happiness. Those are the arguments that we have to win, and we have to push the points home. Because unfortunately, for a great part of the country, they're not only financially challenged, they're numerically challenged, and these numbers don't have the same impact as one person whining does. And so that's the difficulty. Is that the emotional argument tends to trump all of the intellectual argument.
And they're also historically challenged because they don't understand the foundations of the country and why it is we should have and why the founders favored the lowest taxation possible so the people could be more free.
That's exactly right.
977-1070 is the phone number. A few minutes left with David Murata. Okay, so I want to talk some numbers here. 3% and then 18, as in 18 tax breaks I gave to small businesses.
Yeah, the best quote of the evening actually from the debates came from Obama, where he said, we do have a difference, though, when it comes to this definition of small business. Under my plan, he said, 97% of small businesses would not see their income taxes go up. Governor Romney says, well, those top 3%, they're the job creators, they'd be burdened. So it seems to me Obama himself has lobbed us the pitch. Is it the top 3%? Are they really the job creators? And he's conceded that they're the 3% that are going to be burdened. So fortunately, the U.S. government Small Business Administration has all of the stats that we need. And it turns out, if you remember, that 49% of jobs are from small businesses, but they're not all equal. And in fact, 77% of small businesses don't even have any employees. It turns out that top 3.8%, which are corporations with 20 to 499 employees, that top 3.8% employs 64% of all the people employed by small businesses. So it's not only over half the way that Romney suggests, it's actually 64%. So Romney understated the case. And if there was one fact and figure which I think sealed the debate, it would have been that fact and figure, that the top 3.8% employs 64% of everyone employed by small businesses and employed 31.6% of the entire workforce of businesses. Romney rounded them off. He rounded it off to 50% and 25%, but he actually has better stats than that. He was understating the case. So that's the reason to vote for something that will help small businesses. If you want to burden that top 3.8%, you are going to vastly put a crimp in job creation.
Tim writes in from Troy, the Obama attack ad, and this goes to something else we'll have just a couple minutes on, against Romney wailing about tax woes for average Americans and finishing with the remark that Romney paid only 14% on whatever the $20 million of income, as if he'd done something wrong. He said he'd have been in legal trouble if he didn't follow the tax laws. He didn't make those laws. He just has to follow them like any of us. And 14% of $20 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, and not only that, but my blog post or my article yesterday and my blog post today, the reason why Romney only paid 14% of his federal taxes is because he paid 57.9% in taxes and gifts to charity. In other words, he kept his outgo was 57.9%. He kept less than half. And the reason is because when you get taxed, you don't pay tax on tax you pay. And because he paid so much in property tax and other things like that, he didn't get taxed on that tax. And because he gave away so much in charity, he didn't get taxed on what he gave away in charity. But when you look at all the outflows of taxes in charity, it's 57.9%. And again, if you pay 60% tax overseas and then you pay 60% tax at home, you could pay 120%. And it's to keep our tax rates from exceeding 100% that each one has to be only what's left over by everything else you don't pay tax on.
You know, I keep hearing the president and other people in elected office talking about, you know, they can contribute a little bit more. They don't need it. They can give a little bit more. This is not contributing. This is not giving. This is not anything of the sort. And yet they're using this terminology to make it seem like, well, if we raise tax rates, it's because people want to contribute to the government.
Yeah, and I should say that I think presidential tax returns should be private, just like their past sexual experience should be private. On the other hand, when the Democrats have this narrative of greed and miserliness, it just doesn't fit the Romney's tax returns of all people. They are incredibly generous, and they have paid a tremendous amount in total tax of all the different taxes that they ended up then deducting from their income.
I would imagine it dwarves either Obama or Biden as far as their charitable giving percentage-wise of their income.
It does, and on my blog post today is basically the idea that that if you look at the liberal and conservative presidential candidates, the liberals are incredibly miserly in terms of their charitable giving, and the conservatives have been, on the other hand, tremendously generous.
Yeah, the phrase, I guess, could be, I gave at the government.
That's right.
David Morata, we've got just about 30 seconds left. Where is all this going? Is America going to wake up and understand that these free market principles are really the way back to prosperity?
You know, it's a battle today in the not only the nation, it's a battle in each of the parties. The Blue Dog Democrats largely got voted out of office. The libertarian Republicans are not necessarily winning the day, and it's not necessarily dawn in America. It's a battle in the middle of the night, and we're hoping that dawn will rise. But the moral case is all on the side of free markets and free enterprise.
And that is the message we need to keep on hitting. That is the moral system. And it's too bad that people cannot articulate that better. David Morata, thanks so much for joining us today and always on The Shilling Show. Visit him online at moradaonmoney.com.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, indeed. A very important conversation. And by the way, if you missed it, you can catch it on podcast. I hope you will go there, shillingshow.com or wina.com 24/7 and listen to the podcast. We have a lot of people who listen to those overnight, late on the shift. It's like, oh, that's the only time I have to listen to the show. I'm so flattered that you think it's important enough to spend your time with. And we try to present a quality program for you. Hey, we'll have time for some open phones. I want to hear what you thought of last night's debate. I'll tell you what I thought, and it's not pretty. Also, maybe a little John Douglas update. Hit me! The Shilling Show will be back after the news. Stay with us.